12 months in Iran, 3 assassination attempts, 2 successful. The targets, some of Iran's most talented nuclear scientists and academics. The culprits? Well, Iran and a host of Western media reports say it was Israel. The reason? Well, that is what we wanted to find out. Masoud Ali Mohammadi, Iranian quantum field theorist, born in 1960. Married to Masoora Karami, they have 2 children. Distinguished professor of elementary particle physics at Tehran University. He obtained his BSc from Shiraz University in 1985 and then a master's in physics at Sharif University of Technology in Tehran. By 1992, he had become the first PhD graduate in physics at the same university.
He truly was a Nobel scientist. During his scientific lifetime, he produced more than 55 ISI indexed articles with average citation of 7.7 per article.
At 7:58 a.m. local time on the 12th of January 2010, in front of his home in Tehran, while leaving for university, a booby-trapped motorbike parked near his car exploded. The windows of the surrounding homes were shattered by the force of the explosion. A number were injured. Masoud Ali Mohammadi was killed. Majid Shahriyari, born 1970, quantum physicist. He specialized in neutron transport and was a university lecturer at Shahid Beheshti University. He published dozens of reports and research papers. He was married to Behzad Qasemi, also a nuclear physics professor. They had 2 children. On November 29, 2010, unidentified assailants riding motorcycles attached a bomb to the professor's car and detonated it. Shahriyari was killed. Almost simultaneously, elsewhere in the city, nuclear scientist Fereydoon Abbasi, also a university lecturer at Shahid Beheshti University, was driving to work with his wife. The exact same attack, a sticky bomb on his car. Professor Abbasi and his wife had a lucky escape, although they were both seriously injured. The attacks prompted accusations that the United States and Israel were trying to disrupt Iran's nuclear program. Initial reports of who was behind the bombing were disputed. Iran accused Mossad, along with U.S. help, as being responsible, while the U.S. State Department called the allegation absurd. But according to U.S. intelligence sources, Israel is running a secret war against Iran. Among techniques used are the killing of important persons in the Iranian atomic energy program. Iran Today first covered this story in January 2010, after the first assassination of Masoud Ali Mohammadi. There was much speculation and assessment of who may have been behind the attack, who would have benefited. The finger was pointed at Israel. By the end of 2010, 2 other assassination attempts targeting nuclear scientists had taken place. And after those attacks, this article in the Telegraph came up. Earlier this month, the chief, meaning then Mossad head, Meir Dagan, and a small team of specialists, analysts, weapons experts, and psychologists met in a conference room, the article said. It continued to explain that last Monday, 1,000 miles further east in the Iranian capital Tehran, it appears that the Kidan, elite Mossad agents, killed a top nuclear scientist and critically injured a second as they drove through the rush hour traffic. To assist in the attack, Persian-speaking Mossad deep cover agents have been steadily infiltrating Iran for years. How exactly they helped the hitmen flit in and out of the country remains a secret. It was a secret that seemed to be answered on January 11, 2011, when Iran's intelligence minister, Haydar Moslehi, announced this.
افرادی رو در واقع با خودش همراه میکنه برای اینکه اهداف پلیدش رو دنبال بکنه مورد شناسایی قرار بدیم.
He announced the arrest of 10 people in connection with Professor Ali Mohammadi's assassination. As the announcement was made, Masood Ali Mohammadi's wife, Mansoora Karami, wondered who it was that had killed her husband and why. She told us more about her husband and how he was always looking to the future.
فکرشون اینقدر وسیع و باز بود همیشه میگفت من 50 سال بعد میبینم میگفتش که الان هیچ وقت نباید نگاه کنیم بگیم الان ما اینو داریم بسه نه 50 سال دیگر باید نگاه بکنیم که این نفت تموم میشه گاز تموم میشه امکاناتی که هست میگفت این بحران آب تمام دنیا رو گرفته میگفت همه دنیا دارن روی این مسائل فکر میکنن کار میکنن و ما هم باید کار بکنیم فکر میکنم همین هدف ایشون برای پیشرفت مملکت بود که باعث شهادتش شد.
His future though was taken away from him. He would not see Iran 50 years from now. Mansoora took us around their home where Professor Ali Mohammadi spent much of his time studying.
اینجا اتاق دکتر پسر اینجا جایی بود که تقریبا نصف از وقتش رو در روز پشت این صندلی میگذروندن و مشغول کاراشون بودن این ساچمه هایی که رفته تو حتیقه از اینجا ساچمه رفته تو با خواهم این فرقی اینکشون رو شکونده اینجا هم که کتاب خونه شونه این هم جایزه بود که جشنواره خوارزمی بهشون دادن
جز با تلاش ها و مجاهدت های علمی و مدنی جامعه
The person Iran says who was at the heart of the assassination is 26-year-old Majid Jamali Fashi. But who is he? This is what we've been able to find out. Born on January 16, 1984 in Kermanshah, western Iran. He lived with his family in Karaj, just outside the capital, Tehran. He was an athlete, a kickboxer. He did not continue his education, not even going to high school. Instead, he focused on his sport. He started competing even abroad. In December 2006, he went to the UAE to take part in an event on the 14th to 16th. It was a private trip and he had funded it himself. On the 31st of May 2007, he went to Uzbekistan for another competition. He came third place. This is Majid Jamali Fashi in action. Here you can see him in red. He doesn't do well in the fight and is over in a few rounds. Funding his own fights and trips abroad soon became a strain for Jamali Fashi financially. With several friends, he decided that he wanted to seek asylum in a European country. On 28th of October 2007, he went to Turkey and planned that from there he would escape to a neighboring European country and seek asylum. While there, he met the different Iranian exiles. One of them, he says, had a very interesting proposition for him.
یکی از افرادی که اونجا باش آشنا شده بودم یعنی توی همون سفر اول باش آشنا شده بودم یه پیرمردی بود یعنی جوانم نبود یادم مسن بود به من پیشنهاد داد که به کنسولگری اسرائیل بریم گفت بریم اونجا و اونجا واسه شون کار کنیم پول خوب میدن از این امونو تعمیل میکنم به حال رفتیم
So what happened in the next 26 months that led Majid Jamali Fashi to do this?
صبح زودش من بلند شدم و طبق همون مراحلی که آموزشی بودیم به انبار رفتم کارا باید اونجا کرده انجام میدن و اونها انجام میدادن لایف آماده کردنش.
دکتر و بابا اینجا غذا رو از من گرفتن و رفتن به سمت ماشینشون.
موتور از خونه خارج کردم و رسیدم به محلی که باید تماس میگرفتم.
ماشینشون اونجا پارک بود، یه پژو سبز رنگ 405 بود. بعد اومدم اینجا بند کفششون رو صفر کردم و یه چرخ توی حیاط زدم، قشنگ خونه رو یه نگاه کردم.
وارد کوچه شدم و خلوت هم رو تیشکت تردید نداشتم.
من سوار ماشینشون شدم، برای بار دوم از من خدافظی کردم،
موتور رو تو پیاده رو بردم و پارک کردم جلوی در خونه.
در کلاسه صدای انفجار شد. شیشه های اینجا همینجا رو سر من داشت بریخت.
عملیات انجام شده، شما وسایلی که دارید از بین ببرید.
دو تا دستم سر ایشون رو بلند کردم به سمت خودم، کشوندم گذاشتم سرشون رو سمون، یه دیدم که این را به سرش کنم نخواهد.
Before the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the ruler of the time, the Shah, had one of the warmest relations with Israel in the entire region. This wasn't popular, neither was the Shah. His policy of oppression and unpopular policies like relations with Israel in the end were his downfall. A popular movement led to the Islamic Revolution. Since 1979, Israel and Iran have had absolutely no relations. Iran sees Israel as an occupying regime. In every Iranian's passport, it reads, "The holder of this passport is not entitled to travel to the occupied Palestine," as Israel is known. So if it's a widely known fact that Iran sees Israel as an enemy, why would Majid Jamali Fashi go to their consulate?
یکی از دلیلاش مثال مالی بود. دوباره این که به قول معروف از نظر روحی یه حالت این که دوست داشتم اینجور کارا رو، یعنی بعضی ساخته شدن برای این کار، دوست دارن اینجور کارا رو. البته کاملا الان دیگه رد میکنم اینو، چون واقعا میفهمم که یه فرق خیلی بزرگی بین فیلم ها و واقعیت وجود داره، یا چیزایی که میشنویم و چیزایی که میبینیم یه فرق خیلی بزرگی هست.
Majid says that he expected the red carpet treatment at the consulate, but instead, as soon as they saw his Iranian passport, they confiscated it and took him away. He filled in some forms and was asked many more questions. They asked him to come back the next day alone. Majid went back. It was the start of a long and ultimately dangerous relationship. We know why Majid trusted the Israelis, but how could the Israelis trust Majid?
خیلی طول کشید. یعنی یه سیر خیلی بلند مدتی بود که من طی کردم، از فیلترهای خیلی زیادی رد شدم، آزمایشهای خیلی زیادی رو من انجام دادن، آزمایش این که سختی میکشم، برمیگردم، مستمر ارتباطم، دروغ میگم یا راست میگم، دستگاه دروغ سنج به من وصل کردن، خیلی چیزا بود که از فردای اون روز که ارتباطم رو کات نکردم و تماس گرفتم تا لحظه ای که با من دیدار حضوری داشتم، تو تمام این مدت یه چیز علاوهش یک سال طول کشید. یعنی یک سال منو فقط آزمایش کردن، هیچ دیداری نبود.
It was decided that Majid would go to Thailand for his first face-to-face meeting outside the consulate on 26th of January 2009, where he says he received practical training. Majid needed a cover. It was decided that he would use his sports activities as an excuse to go abroad. From abroad, he would bring back clothes and sell them in a shop he had set up in Karaj. He was Majid practicing in Thailand. And so started the list of trips abroad that included Thailand again on 16th of May 2009, Antalya, Turkey 2nd of August 2009. In Antalya, he was told on his next trip he would most probably travel to Israel itself. On 23rd of October 2009, as you can see, he traveled to Azerbaijan. 19 days later, he left.
یه پاسپورت به من نشون دادن، یه پاسپورت اسرائیلی بود که توی سفارتش من نگاه کردم یه بار مهر ورود به آذربایجان خورده بود، یعنی فقط یه مهر ورود خورده بود، قرار بود من مثلا مهر خروج به اون بکنم. یه پاسپورت کاملا اسرائیلی و یه شخص اسرائیلی که توی تل‌آویو به دنیا اومده بود، عکس خودم بود ولی اسمش فرق می‌کرد، اسم رام سلیمانی بود، یعنی نام اون شخصی که توی پاسپورت بود.
Majid says they boarded a flight to Ben Gurion Airport and from there they went to Herzliya. There, he says, he received training at a special center. He said the training included everything from military drills and how to build a bomb to lessons into how to change his appearance. He held one last meeting before leaving Israel, where he was told by the Mossad commander that on his return he'd undertake a very important assignment.
خصوصی با من صحبت کرد و دوباره یه سری تعریف و تمجیدها و اینکه این یه عملیات خیلی مهمه، ما هزینه های خیلی زیادی کردیم، افراد خیلی زیادی توی این کار دست دارن و تو کسی هستی که ما بهش تکیه کردیم، یعنی تو اگر توی این عملیات ناموفق باشی تمام این آدم هایی که میبینی از بین میرن.
Majid went back to Baku and from there to Tehran. 2 months were still to pass until 12th of January 2010, the day Masoud Ali Mohammadi was assassinated. After the attack, he went on 2 more trips, one to Armenia on 5th of April 2010, where he met again with Israeli agents to debrief. Another trip was to Australia on the 28th of July 2010. He says this was to cover his tracks and make it look like all his trips had been for sports. But one question that remained for us was, during that time in Iran, how did Majid communicate with the Mossad? This is the equipment seized from Majid upon his arrest. They fall into 2 categories. He had a host of hidden spy communication equipment, but not everything was undercover. His laptop was a key to his communication.
این لپتوپ به بقیه لپتوپ فرق میکرد و خیلی هم به من اطمینان داده بودن که خیالت راحت باشه، دولت جمهوری اسلامی ایران به هیچ عنوان نمیتونه حتی یک کلمه از اینه که تو برای من میفرسی بتونه کشف کنه یا بخونه یا فاش بشه. خیلی اطمینان داده بودن از این که من میرفتم به قسمت قرمز، قسمت دو تا ویندوز داشت، یه ویندوزه که اصطلاح خودشون ویندوز سفید و ویندوز قرمز بود، تو اونجا پیام می نوشتم و ارسال می کردم، البته به صورت زنده نبود، به صورت چت نبود، پیام ها به صورت زمان خاصی بود، مثلا الان می فرستادن امکان داره مثلا فردا به دستشون برسه، البته همین همزمان هیچ وقت با هم دیگه در ارتباط نبودیم، یه وقته زمانی بینشون.
We wanted to know more about how Majid was caught and arrested. Iran's intelligence minister says one was through Majid's communication on the internet that Iran says it was able to infiltrate, also from Majid's trips and meetings outside the country, and finally through intelligence it obtained from Majid's friends and associates.
خریدن موتور، اجاره کردن انبار، آوردن بمب، آوردن اون وسایل، خریدن تلفن ها و خیلی چیزهای دیگه، جمع‌آوری اطلاعات اولیه و به نظر من خیلی آدم ها بودن که توی این دست داشتن و هیچ ارتباطی هم با من نداشتن، یعنی من یه بنبست بین ما همیشه بین هم دیگه گذاشتن که من اصلا هیچ وقت هیچ کدوم از اینا رو نمی‌شناختم.
Professor Ali Mohammadi's wife wanted to meet the man who had a hand in killing her husband.
ما تو زندگی یک سال برای حتی هم دیگه نداشتیم. با
واقعا من تو تمام زندگی احساس میکنم خوشبخت‌ترین زن روی زمینم. چرا با من همچین کاری کردی؟ اون همین بی‌گناه من بود که باعث شد شما حالا ببری، یعنی با این روشی که کار کرده بودم عمرن شاید میتونستن شما رو بگیرم، ولی خون بی‌گناه هیچ وقت به هدر نمیره و پاگیر دونه به دونه همه کسایی که دست داشتن تو این کار، چه تو شهادت دکتر علی محمدی، چه تو شهادت دکتر شهریاری، من مطمئنم همه اینا رو خواهیم رفت و رسوا خواهیم شد.
But Professor Ali Mohammadi was not the only nuclear scientist killed in 2010. So was his colleague and friend Majid Shahriyari. When Ali Mohammadi was killed, he mourned. Here you can see him among the large crowds that gathered for Ali Mohammadi's funeral. Little did he know that he wouldn't make it to the end of the year either. While driving to work with his wife on November 29, 2010, a sticky bomb exploded, leaving him dead. His wife Behjat Qasemi was critically injured and just made it out alive, but she lives on without her husband. We went to visit her and asked her if Ali Mohammadi's assassination had left her and her husband scared.
هدف من هم اینه دیگه که این طرف کار نکنه که مشکل ایجاد کار کردن اینا مشکل ایجاد. من یه ایتون بگه عده بونه میکردیم به یه مقدار هم ملاحظات رو در نظر داشتیم و اینکه هم خودمون محفوظ کنیم، نمیدونم مسافرت نداریم به خونه نداریم.
The scars from the accident are still evident on her face, but the scars from the memories of that day are even deeper. When she realized what was happening, she got out of the car, but instead of running away, she ran towards her husband, trying desperately to get him out. But the bomb was attached too firmly, and the door wouldn't open. On January 17, 2011, Iran's caretaker foreign minister, Ali Akbar Salehi, announced, Iran's complaint against the Zionist regime will be submitted to international bodies soon. It won't be the first time that a country has complained to the United Nations about Israeli spy activity or assassination. Lebanon, France, Italy, Palestine, the list is long. But more than just complaining, can those responsible be brought to account? We met with Hossein Rivaran, prominent Iranian expert on Israeli affairs, who said there is a shortfall in international laws and bodies.
حتی زمانی که مثلا مایر لوگان اعلام میکنه میگن اظهار نظر شخصی است و دولت اسرائیل اعلام نکرده که این ترور را ما انجام دادیم و هیچگاه هم اعلام نخواهد کرد، چون اعلامی صورت نمیگیره و بحث بر اساس شاخص هم اگر باشه یک طرف است، همونطور که جاسوس های اسرائیلی در ایران اعلام کردن، لذا در حقوق بین الملل سوابقی وجود نداره در زمینه پیگیری مباحث ترور و کشورهایی که آلوده تروریست نهادینه شده دولتی هستند.
According to official statistics, the regime of Saddam Hussein, through his proxies, the terrorist organization the NKO, undertook targeted assassinations and terrorist acts. After being put to death, footage was released of Saddam's intelligence agents meeting with NKO operatives. The second is Israel. Iran says for three decades after the Islamic Revolution, Israel focused on spy activity in the country, but for the last year, it has changed phase into action and the targeted assassinations of its nuclear scientists. So how damaging are these attacks? Can they stop Iran from its nuclear path? In Washington, we posed this question to Jeff Steinberg from the Executive Intelligence Review.
Quite frankly, nuclear enrichment technology, the production of the centrifuges, all of the key elements of a full set nuclear reactor program have been mastered by Iranian scientists and scientists working in Iran. And so I think that at best, these kinds of actions can slow the program down, perhaps buy a bit more time for international negotiations about a kind of a surveillance regime, agreements with IAEA, but ultimately this will not stop the program.
The loss of two important academics is of course a huge loss to the country, but their colleagues say it will not deter them. And it will never stop Iran from pursuing its right in nuclear technology or anything else.
The right that the country has chosen to take knowledge as power is right. Because what enemies are trying to do is trying to take top scientists out. That itself is a clear sign that the path that we have taken, the country has taken, to reach to the hills of knowledge is the right path.